We're going to begin our next session. We have first Justin Schwartz, who is here. He is here from Regis College downtown, and he's an evangelical from Nebraska.
No. Last time I moved from was Illinois, so.
Okay. But he's an American here studying at a Jesuit school, studying a Catholic theologian, but who has a lot to say about the topic, so that's why he's here to talk to us today. So welcome, Justin.
Thanks. James said to say a few words possibly about why in the world am I into Bernard Lonergan. What are you doing studying a Catholic, some people may say. I did an MDiv and MA in Lincoln, Illinois at Lincoln Christian University. And myself, I was struggling with questions of development and doctrine, the role of philosophy and theology, experience in theology, religious conversion, he'll talk about. How does theology, philosophy go together? Just seemed to be a lot of the issues that I had questions about. He had the same exact questions. So study a mind that's been through your questions. You know, hopefully you'll understand. Lonergan himself, he said he studied Aquinas for 11 years, trying to reach up to the mind of Aquinas. So difficult project. I did my MDiv in historical theology, totally different. I wrote my master's thesis on origin, on free will, and judgment. And so I moved into something completely different now. Up here in Canada, I came to Toronto to study at the Lonergan Research Institute at Regis. So that's a little bit about me. So here we go. What are we talking about when we talk about experience? Are we even talking about the same thing? You say experience, I say experience, she says experience. I think this symposium has left the question open, probably on purpose. Perhaps there is a caution on the matter because of a lack of refinement on what experience is. So at the symposium, a stated focus on experience in theology and how questions of how exactly it should fit within the theological enterprise demand some clarity. So the aim of my presentation is to attempt to bring some clarity to the discussion at this symposium on this topic of experience through a presentation of Bernard Lonergan's conception of experience and its role within a general framework of how we come to know. I'll do this in several steps. First, I will summarize Lonergan's approach named intentionality analysis, which yields what he calls a cognitional theory. Second, I will describe and define experience, according to Lonergan. Third, I will describe how experience fits within Lonergan's outline of the four intentional levels involved in fully human knowing, which we'll get to. So some main takeaways from this presentation to clarify experience are these I'm going to go through. First, experience is involved in all of our knowing. Second, experience by itself is not fully human knowledge and requires more. And I'll talk about interpretation and judgment. And third, as the title of my paper, objectivity is the fruit of authentic subjectivity, which sounds really weird when you first hear it. And fourth, experience is involved when all people practice theology. So a little intro on Lonergan. Bernard Lonergan was a Roman Catholic Jesuit priest who lived from 1904 to 1984. A polymath, he wrote and published in the areas of philosophy, theology, economics, methodology, culture, and more. Perhaps best known for his 1958 book, Insight, A Study in Human Understanding, his other magnum opus, Method in Theology, was published in 1972, was the culmination of his lifelong interest in theological method. The goal of Insight was to be the foundational basis for a theological method, while Method in Theology actually finishes that project. So at the basis of these works, Lonergan answers a question that I think is of interest here today, What am I doing when I'm knowing? What am I doing when I'm knowing? The answer to this question yields what he calls a cognitional theory. So to answer the question, what am I doing when I'm knowing, Lonergan abandoned what we might call a faculty psychology, which uses metaphysical terms such as intellect and will. A faculty psychology is like this. It has metaphysical entities that are basically unavailable for us to use for examination. So, in general, most theologians have used the concepts of a faculty psychology, such as Thomas Aquinas or Wesley. They speak of the will, the intellect, these faculties of the human that are basically unexaminable. So Lonergan believed that in order to know how we come to know anything, we need to pay close attention to the things that go on in our consciousness. So, basic presupposition. He listed the following as these basic pattern of operations that go on. I think you'll get a feeling for what these are. Seeing, hearing, touching, smelling, tasting, inquiring, imagining, understanding, conceiving, formulating, reflecting, marshaling and weighing the evidence, judging, deliberating, evaluating, deciding, speaking, and writing. Therefore, Lonergan turns to an intentionality analysis. So I want to make clear what he's talking about. So taking inspiration from the branch of philosophy named phenomenology, in a sense, intentionality analysis is concerned with the objects that we intend through consciousness. The word intend should not be confused for its usual meaning, which means deliberate, like I deliberately did this. What he's referring to is the fact that each of these operations requires an object. So, for example, I cannot see without seeing something. I cannot imagine without imagining something. You know, the eye is to seeing, the ear is to hearing. So Lonergan further explains, to say that the operations intend objects is to refer to such facts as that by seeing, there becomes present what is seen. By hearing, there becomes present what is heard. By imagining, there becomes present what is imagined, and so on, where in each case, the presence in question is a psychological event. Importantly, objects are not simply physical things before us. In a real sense, everything we know through consciousness. I've spoken of objects, and on the other side of the equation, operations imply an operator, and the operator we call the subject. You, me, or someone else, we are subjects. So the operations are performed consciously, and it is through these operations that the operator is conscious. So basically, we intend objects, and through intending them, we're conscious of ourselves. So the operations are diverse, and so are the objects intended by them. Lonergan identified four levels of consciousness and intentionality. So this is not straight one-to-one, but he's using an analogy of levels. So it's an image for you to grasp onto. So four levels. First, the empirical level, the level of experiencing. So at first, we sense, we perceive, we imagine, we feel, and so on, and all those things are real to us. Second, the intellectual level, or the level of understanding. What happens there? Inquiring, understanding, conceiving, and so on. Third level is the rational level, the level of judging, which is where we reflect, we marshal and weigh evidence, we pass judgment on the truth or falsity of something, the certainty or probability, maybe, of a statement. And the fourth level is the responsible level, the level of deciding. So this is where we consider possible courses of action, we evaluate them, and decide whether to carry them out. Should we do such and such if we've decided it's good? This is how Lonergan describes the subject's movement through these levels. quoting him, "Our consciousness expands in a new dimension when from mere experiencing we turn to the effort to understand what we have experienced. A third dimension of rationality emerges when the content of our acts of understanding is regarded as, of itself, a mere bright idea, and we endeavor to settle what really is so. A fourth dimension comes to the fore when judgment on the facts is followed by deliberation on what we are to do about them." End quote. So more succinctly, we could say that every act of knowing involves a pattern of experiencing, understanding, and judging. So let's do a little bit on experiencing. So if someone is in a deep coma or is undergoing dreamless sleep, they can't come to know anything because they're not experiencing anything. So we'd have to say experiencing is necessarily a part of knowing. But contrary to the claims of empiricist philosophy, experience is not in itself constitutive of knowledge. You need more than just experience to have knowledge. So what we experience is by itself not much more than scraps of data. Second, understanding. To the data of our experience, we put the question, what is it, right? Like a little kid. Dad, what is that? What is that? What is that? What is that? They have all this experience, but they don't understand what it is. Lonergan calls this the question for intelligence. Our answer comes in the form of what he calls an insight, that moment of connection, that grasp, aha, I have it. So we have an insight whenever we come to understand something, though not everything might be that dramatic, as, aha, I've got it, finally. So merely arriving at an insight is not knowledge either. That's not constitutive of knowledge. Our answer to the question, what is it, might well be correct, but of course, it might not be. It could be incorrect. So we don't just stop there. For judging, with regard to our insight, we ask the question, is it so? This is the what he calls question for reflection, in a sense of one reflects back upon the data with the possible answer to the question to verify if it is in fact so. So the question for reflection is answered with a further insight, what Lonergan calls a reflective insight. Does my hypothesis account for the data that is before me? So through different levels of intentionality, we move up through questioning. This is, I think, key. Experience is on the basic level of knowing, and yes, it is involved in all knowing. Empiricists say this is what knowledge consists of, but that's not really correct for fully human knowledge. Experience in itself is not knowledge, but merely data that demands questioning. What we experience is material that brings about questioning through our wondering. We ask, what or why is it? And this leads to insight and the formulation of a hypothesis, some explanation, and then we naturally move to not simply formulating an explanation, but asking whether our explanation is true or not. He's talking about what he says is the natural drive of our intelligence. We naturally start with some sort of data, and we just ask the question, why or what? And then it's only natural for us to move on from there to say, well, is it true or is it not true? What's going on there? So we have to move our hypothesis back to the data, test to see if our explanation holds and accounts for all of the data. We need to answer all of the pertinent questions and answer with yes, no, or maybe. I don't know. I don't have enough data. You know, I can't explain it. So a key point in all of this, and what makes intentionality analysis so helpful, I think, is that, really, we experience all these things that I'm talking about, and you can verify them in your experience. Lonergan's toolkit isn't simply some theory that's abstract, but something we can verify in ourselves. And in fact, he sets out in his book, Insight, he just says, I'm asking you as the reader to self-appropriate. Don't take me at my word, but see if this is what's happening within you. Okay, why? Well, I think we can all agree. we experience new objects, data, things we don't know what they are. That's an experience I've had. We experience ourselves wondering and asking questions about them. I can agree with that. We might not do this as often as small children who say, why, but we still do this, right? We experience ourselves trying to come up with explanations. We experience having insights. Ah, I've got it. And we have experienced trying to attempt to verify them. We have flashes of connections when we finally figure out a question we've been trying to answer. I'd say these things happen to us, and we can't deny that they do. It would be quite odd to do so. Lonergan has this funny paragraph where he says, you know, it would be really weird for someone writing a journal article to be like, I've never had an original thought. You know, I've never wondered. You know, I've never looked at this piece of scripture and thought, what does that mean? You know, I've never tried to come up with an explanation for that. I've never tried to show how my interpretation is the best interpretation. It's like, if you deny that goes on, what is going on in you? I mean, so he's trying to make an appeal to experience. In the sense of, like, this is something that goes on within us. It's not just something way up here.
Some have never had an unpublished thought.
Yeah. Maybe they stole it from someone else, though. So, Lonergan's intentionality analysis kind of summarily lays out why objectivity is the fruit of authentic subjectivity. Again, weird. Because usually when we think of objectivity in the modern world, we think, you know, not having the subject involved at all, trying to be far away and being an observer and not involve yourself in the situation. But if fully human knowing is the result of moving from the level of experience to understanding to judging, then all objectivity involves some sort of subjectivity. Because it involves the subject, some way or another. To deny that is kind of strange. If we end with experiencing, we just stop there. Okay, I've got data. What do I do with this data? If we end with understanding, we merely have something notional, a hypothesis. Might not be real. If we end with judging, and with an affirmative answer to our question, we'd probably say we've come to what is the actual state of the things or is not the actual state of the things. Are we in conformity to reality or not? The real question dealing with subjectivity is, what I want to put forward is, what kind of subjectivity? Hence I've qualified subjectivity with the term authentic. Lonergan calls his system a critical realism. Now, it's a realism because he thinks what's outside of us is real, can be verified. But it's also critical because we have to test to see if our experience is in accordance with reality. Just because you may put a stick in the water and it bends in the light doesn't mean you have to get rid of all your experience and say, all my faculties are unreliable, such as maybe Descartes. So to talk about this, he emphasizes this with what he says, the be imperatives, like B-E, be imperatives, which accord with each level, experiencing, understanding, judging, deciding. He says, so be attentive to the data of experience. Be intelligent, asking questions and making formulations. Be reasonable, using your judgment, and be responsible. You know, what are you going to do? When we're biased, or we could say inauthentic, and don't follow this movement of our intending, we mess up, right? We make mistakes. So it is following the natural movement of our intelligences that will result in objectivity. But of course, sin is involved, so we have biases and inauthenticity and things that need to be corrected. So there will be other theological emphases that need to be put in here, which he will do later, but I'm not getting into that here today. I'm just trying to lay down some kind of basics. I just want you to know that it's not like, oh, we're forgetting about sin, how this affects how we understand, things like that. maybe in times for questions. So again, therefore, experience is involved in all of what we come to know. So to be objective is right to follow our questioning things in a way that is proper to the human. Like, how do we come to know things? Let's try and figure that out. Let's try and follow that. And it's going to always involve the subject. So, moving to my assertion that experience is involved when all people practice theology. So I just want to go through some examples, and maybe you can get an experience for this. So theology will begin with research, the task of gathering all of the pertinent data. A textual critic analyzes many diverse manuscripts in multiple languages, uses diverse theoretical frameworks of what the best manuscript tradition is by year, location, tradition, and selects and grades the best possible reading when differences occur in manuscripts. Right? Okay. So the textual critic has to really have a hold on what he or she is doing in the task and be authentic in carrying out that task so that their bias doesn't creep in and leave inaccurate data for the reader or translator of the critical text. The critical text then moves on as data to the translator and commentary writer for their use, and they have to make decisions on the work of the textual critic, such as if an alternate reading is better suited, what did the author intend to communicate from this? The best edition of the text that we have today? The translator and commentary writer have to make interpretive decisions and use theories of translation, such as phrase-based or word-based renditions. Those who follow the history of the interpretation of a text have to make decisions of what is developing and going forward, what is authentic and inauthentic to the text, and hand this on today. All this work is simply working with past issues of the data for theology that I've gone over, and is shot through with the experience of each person working in the theological task. Dealing with how theologians make decisions about what they believe and how they will communicate it to an audience today will be fraught with even more aspects of experience. So I think what will be of importance will be control of the process of doing theology so that we can understand how to be most objective and when we are straying too far into bias and in the authenticity. So really to do that, you kind of have to have a grasp of how do we come to know things anyway? How do I know when I'm going too far and being too subjective? Or how do I know when I'm kind of holding and trying to be objective? Do we have things to help us with that? So already, it's been 20 minutes, 21 minutes. I've kind of held to that. So I'll just kind of summarize now.
Sure.
And James will tell me what he wants to do, questions or not. So in conclusion in this presentation, I think I summarized Lonergan's approach named intentionality analysis, which yields what he calls a cognitional theory. Second, I described and defined experience according to Lonergan, basically the level of experience, what that entails. And I described how experience fits within Lonergan's outline of the four intentional levels involved in fully human knowing. So some of the main takeaways from this presentation to clarify experience were, first, experience is involved in all our knowing, and we have to get a control on that somehow. Second, experience by itself is not fully human knowledge and requires at least interpretation and judgment. Third, objectivity is the fruit of authentic subjectivity. And fourth, experience is involved when we all practice theology. So, thank you.
Time for questions and comments or responses to Justin's presentation. Maybe some of it's questions for clarification. You can just field them from there. You can see everybody.
Yes.
Early in your address, sir, you were mentioned that we know through consciousness, and then a minute later you said we know consciously. I'm not sure that they're the same, and I was wondering if claiming we do know through consciousness, but there is much that we know through consciousness we don't know consciously. I'm thinking here of Michael Polanyi and tacit knowing. And I was wondering if Lonergan has any acknowledgement or any discussion of tacit knowing and how it's related to intentionality.
Yeah. One of the interesting things is that Polanyi's...
Could I just...
Oh, is there more? I thought that was the end of the question.
That's one question.
Okay. All right. I was hoping one.
The other one was the Hebrew prophet speaks about knowing God, and Calvin and others, Wesley too.
Yes.
Maintain that knowing God is a knowledge. It is genuine knowledge. It's not speculation, and it's more sure and certain than empirical knowing.
Yes.
How is the knowledge of God, which is knowing, the knowledge, related to the fourfold epistemological grid of Lonergan that you...
Got it.
Those are my two questions.
Okay. Good questions. Yeah. Things I did not... go into. So the Polanyi thing. That book actually came out, what's his main book came out in 58?
Tacit knowledge.
Well, no, not that one. The bigger one, on personal knowledge?
Personal knowledge.
Personal knowledge. Yeah, that's interesting, because they both came out in 58. And Polanyi, I think, he focuses more on belief, whereas Lonergan takes the route of more generative knowledge. So I was a little fast and loose there with consciousness. So, when Lonergan talks about consciousness, he's not talking about pictorial. Some people would think of consciousness as pictorially, like, oh, you can't know consciousness because you can't take a look at consciousness. So when he's referring to consciousness, he just means those conscious operations, like in experiencing understanding. So like I can experience I'm seeing, I'm hearing, those types of things is what he's talking about when he says consciousness. And so, really, it's in intentionality. So he kind of has a different concept of consciousness than some other writers. Does that get at the first one at all?
I'm just wondering what place he has in his own understanding for tacit knowing.
Tacit knowledge. Can you define tacit knowledge more?
Let that one go in.
Okay.
What do we want to do this time?
Yeah, the second one, knowing God, he does have...
A Hebrew understanding of knowing versus his fourfold.
Yeah. So he has, later in something like Method and Theology, he talks about religious knowledge and religious consciousness and how it would be on the fourth level of consciousness. So he goes into, like, feelings and values and how those are involved in the human person. And he does get there and talk about how faith and reason are connected. This was more of not, this wasn't a theological, like, this is how we come to know, like, mysticism or something, that the different type of knowing. So I was just trying to kind of put a foundation for this first, and then, because really to get what he's saying on religious knowledge, you have to have an idea of what he says in the basic foundation first. So I feel like if I was going to give another paper, like, or, you know, if I had more and more time, I would try and do both. So I wasn't trying to accomplish what you're asking me to do.
Okay.
But if you want to get a hint at it, in his book of lectures, third collection, he has a few lectures on religious knowledge that are pretty straightforward and simple. Or slog through Method and Theology. I could point you places, but thank you for your questions.
Other questions or comments?
Yes.
Actually, I can just follow up because that was my question as well. I seem to remember I asked, did you present at CETA? And I think I probably asked.
Yes, you were asking me about intuition.
Intuition, non-conceptual knowledge, it goes back to a lot of different things. From the psychological side. So in terms of consciousness, I think it's important that there are two definitions, and I think maybe you and or Lonergan are conflating the two. So the first is more a medical definition of consciousness, right? So if somebody's in deep sleep or a coma, medically they're not conscious. Whereas the other way we think in terms of consciousness is our continual awareness of our environment. It's more philosophical, psychological term. So I think it can get confusing if we conflate those two definitions, so that can help clarify. I've only read Lonergan very briefly. I find his language difficult. Good for you. He did have a couple of chapters on transcendental knowledge and insight. something, but he never seems to really go there. Like he uses the term, but he doesn't seem to go there. And quite a few others have written, and it's particularly relevant to the whole into charismatic theology, right? The whole idea of, and again, the two definitions of experience that has come up several times today already, but the first definition of the experience is just, you know, going through life, and that seems to be what Lonergan's referring to versus the experiential, like spiritual, you know, mystical type
experience. Yeah, we call that religious experience, right. Religious conversion.
Which is the two can interrelate,
yes.
But it seems to me that Lonergan doesn't really, and that would be fit under intuition, non-conceptual knowledge, and it seems to me that Lonergan doesn't really.
It wouldn't be an insight. Insight is a philosophical foundations more so. He does talk about general transcendent knowledge and transcendent knowledge. Those are different chapters in insight. But he's not really working on what you want. But if you want to talk about like non-conceptual knowledge, I mean, that's kind of what coming to form concepts is. Like for him, getting an insight and then formulating it and becoming conceptual. So there is... It's totally non-conceptual also before. So there's, if that tacit, if we want to talk about like non-conceptual knowledge, that's totally what's going on here. What we're talking about, this is, like this might tacitly be going on, but until we try and kind of conceptualize, this is one conceptualization, until we try and conceptualize and analyze and kind of bring forth what is actually going on, when we ask those questions and try and deal with it, then we might come up with conceptualizations of how is this working.
Just to sort of put a point on what you're saying, I guess, and reflecting on your evangelical background, how evangelicals might tend to think about experience in theology, what's the difference here? Like, what's the thing we take away that's different from the way Lonergan's talking, from the way people generally think about the question?
Well, I think he's trying to ground it, really, and say, we have all sorts of experiences. We have experiences all the time. And we have to pay attention to those. I think intentionality asks us, pay attention to those experiences that you have, really. And whether it's reading scripture or prayer and worship, all the doing theology, like, those things matter. He'll talk about religious experience and the experience of in fact, some otherworldly love in a sense of that what changes our lives is the principle of we loving God more than all other things. He talks about it as a religious conversion. He'll talk about moral conversion as loving others more than yourself. What's good for you? You do what is the right thing that is good overall. And then he wants to talk about, like, epistemological knowing, a type of knowing conversion. Of knowing is not like taking a look. We don't think of knowing something as like just reading the text of the Bible and I know it. I know what it says because I read it. As opposed to it requires interpretation. So I think there are a lot of layers. It's just kind of complicating it more. My tradition was. And at least in some of the churches I was just like, anyone can come to the Bible, and if you just look at it, if we take away all our traditions, all our previous understandings, if we just brought the Bible together and read it, we'd be able to agree on everything.
Right.
So that's more of a knowing is like taking a look,
right.
Like more empirical. Mm-hmm. So to me, I'm like, yeah, it's not that simple. So the one application.
Great. Jared, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, I'm curious about this. It's sort of an inside your own head individual approach. But how would you see applying this in a collective sort of? How would you do this as a group in understanding not just theology and not just the Bible?
Yeah.
But you know, forgive me, your neighborhood. Like,
sure. So actually, funny, he actually the main thing he wants to lay out here is what he calls functional specialization. where he lays out, we'll just say theology, for example. I was kind of doing somewhat. You have, like, research, interpretation, history, dialectic, what he wants to call foundations, doctrines, systematics, communications. And he wants to say that, you know, we live in a realm, a world of specialization. Like, you've done studies in a special area. Like, I can't do the specific studies of a textual critic. That other person has done a lot of that work. So what he's trying to do is, and it's essentially this is a foundation for this kind of thing, where he's trying to lay out a framework of collaboration so people can work together and say, hey, I know what I'm doing in textual criticism, you know what you're doing in interpretation, you know what you're doing in history, and I can, like a relay race, passing a baton, like, so then I can then take my results and give it to you and give it to you and move all the way down to how to properly communicate today. Because a lot of the issues are, how do you take a pre-modern text and then doctrines are really in theory. Like, so there's that move and development through history from non-theoretical to theoretical and back down to the common person, which is non-theoretical. Like, you're not going to get up there and read Aquinas or something to people for a sermon, or hopefully you just don't even read your sermon off of. But it's a really a call for it's missing other parts, the community aspect that's required, because you need a community to be authentic as a human being. You can't just do things as an individual. The church is a community. Your neighborhood is a community. We live and breathe. We're born into communities. And that's, you know, so we're first in a community before I'm even an individual, right? I think what he's really just trying to lay out is how to be an authentic human being, in a sense. But it's theological, too, in a sense, theologically. How do we be the human beings we're supposed to be? If God, in a sense, if we take kind of the analysis I gave, like, if we're created in such a way that we come to know this way and understand this way, and we deviate from that, that's where bias and things happen in community and we fail. If we follow this, and through the grace of God and redemption, hopefully things get better. So he has a robust social analysis of decline and redemption, things like this. So. Anyways, that's just kind of a start. I hope that's helpful in some way.
I just see the breakdown of, say, a prejudice that a church would hold toward their neighborhood or toward their neighbors would be because they have an unverified explanation about who they are. That's, they've skipped that step and gone to action.
Yes. That's a very good point. And you'll have communities themselves that are biased, right? So you have the different communities. So, but sometimes there's authentic individuals within communities who call for change.
Thanks, Justin. I feel like kind of like part of your message here is Lonergan's thought of everything. Is that what you're trying to tell us?
I'm just trying to answer the question.
Okay, no.
I can't give everything in a 20-minute paper.
Yes, no.
But I can answer.
Thanks very much for bringing a very different perspective to the table to get us thinking. So Justin is finished now. Janelle Zeke is going to...